I will be presenting 7 interrelated habits that highly effective people have internalized, habits that are part of their very nature. I'd like to give you an idea of what you can expect and also what you should do to meet these expectations. This is a life-changing program. I'm not using hyperbole. I'm not trying to exaggerate for effect. It is an absolute guarantee that if you will understand these habits, teach them to other people, and learn them well, and then apply, live them until they become part of your nature, it will change your life in a very fundamental way for good in these areas. 1, improved self-confidence, self-esteem. That will come largely out of a sense of better self-control. You're not victimized. You're not being controlled by circumstances. You are in control. 2, improved relationships. Many people have relationships that are deteriorating. They're broken or they're breaking. It may be with their loved ones at home. It may be in their businesses. To significantly improve the quality of our relationships is one of the major expectations. You can expect it. It will happen. Those first 2 expectations are very related to each other. The higher your self-confidence is, the more you will respect others and work well with them. The less their weaknesses will be empowered by your depending upon them, relating to those weaknesses. Never build your emotional life on the weaknesses of other people. By doing so, you empower their weaknesses to control you. You magnify them. You strengthen them. You enlarge them. 3, your capacity to influence others will be significantly enhanced, to motivate others. How would you like to see your kids do their jobs cheerfully without being reminded? How would you like to see your employees or other of your working associates willingly sense your need, respond to it, cooperate, creatively solve problems? A 4th area of expectation is the spirit of adventure and creativity and joy and zest and excitement and happiness. The spirit of seizing new opportunities, doing new things, of growth, of learning. These things are very, very exciting. These are the 4 basic areas I think you can expect dramatic, even in some cases, revolutionary results.
Hundreds of thousands of people have recognized the revolutionary effects of learning and using the techniques outlined by Dr. Stephen Covey in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Dr. Covey has helped people discover how to harness the habits he's isolated among successful people the world over. Habit number 1 is the power of proactivity, and it's just the start for you to improve all areas of your life. The rest of the habits will show you how to organize your work and your life for maximum reward and enjoyment. These include beginning with the end in mind, putting first things first, win-win thinking, understanding others, synergy, and sharpening the saw. Dr. Covey has assembled these characteristics through extensive research and observation. His work as an international leadership consultant has put him in contact with the world's top business leaders, and among his past clients are IBM, AT&T, and General Motors. An educator and author, Dr. Covey earned an MBA degree from Harvard University. He'll earn your attention and respect as well as you progress through these cassettes. First, you'll discover how you can become more effective by focusing on the right activities in your life. Then you'll learn the strength you can gain from understanding personal paradigms, and then applying this understanding to every encounter. The core of this program is the 7 habits. Dr. Covey will take you through these habits, step by step, with practical applications that you can use in your life today to make it and you more effective and enjoyable than ever. This isn't a quick fix or an easy solution to your problems, but it is an exciting journey to help you discover your inner resources and how to use them. You might say it's an evolution of excellence. Now let's start that evolution with Dr. Stephen Covey, who begins by telling us this progress is not without its price.
You have to pay the price. The price basically involves these things. Work very diligently to understand. Learn, in other words. Work with your mind to think deeply in sustained ways about this material. Two, teach it to other people. Shortly after you learn this material, teach it. By shortly, I mean within 24 to 48 hours. You simply will learn better when you teach. All of us have had that experience because your whole sense of responsibility is significantly increased. You know that you're expected to teach someone else or another group the same material that you're learning. It also will give you a sense of commitment to the material, simply because you're making a statement when you teach this material. It socially commits you. And that's powerfully reinforcing to your own motivation to live the material, to live the principles, to cultivate the habits. I encourage a commitment to teach. And think right now who you're going to teach and when. Put it on your calendar. Put it into your schedule. Literally, plan to teach it. I would encourage two times. Once to your loved ones and once to your working associates. To others who you know would have an interest and you'd like to share this material with. But the most important activity, of course, is the doing, the applying, the living. Whenever we are enlightened about a correct principle, it is incumbent upon us to live it. That is the only basis on which we can receive further understanding of other principles, higher principles. That's the test of our integrity. Integrity basically is the value that we place upon ourselves. That's a test of our self-discipline. So those are the three basic activities: learning, teaching, doing, or living, applying the material. We must initially define effectiveness. In other words, what is an effective person? What does effectiveness mean? I'd like to begin with a little story. It's Aesop's famous fable about the poor farmer, down on his luck, discouraged and so forth, comes across his favorite goose, and one day and he finds next to it this beautiful golden egg, glistening, brilliant gold, and he's sure that someone's tricked him. So he throws it away into the bushes, and then on second thought, he says, well, what have I got to lose? I might as well test it. And he finds out, after taking it to the assayer, that it is pure gold. And he is thrilled beyond anything you can imagine. And the next day he comes back, and there's another one. And the next day, another one. Every day, another golden egg. And he becomes wealthy, you know, beyond his wildest dreams. To the point that he also becomes very greedy. He wants all of those eggs. And very impatient. He wants them now. So he devises this plan to kill the goose and reach inside and get all of these golden eggs. And of course, after he lops off the head of the goose and reaches inside, he finds, of course, none. No golden eggs. I suggest that that little story is the essence of true success. The essence of the effective person. There are always two sides to success. Effectiveness always has two sides to it. The goose and the golden egg. Now, what is the goose? The goose is the asset that produces the golden egg. The golden egg is what you want from the asset. So if you adopt a pattern of life that focuses only on what you want and neglects the goose, or that liquidates the asset, you'll have no more of what you want. No more golden eggs. That's the idea.
Or if you do the opposite. If you only take care of the goose with no aim toward golden eggs or toward the production that you want, you won't have the wherewithal to continue to feed the goose. The key is balance between the goose and the golden egg. Now, let me use a little abbreviation of these two ideas, the goose and the golden egg. We call it the PPC balance. P stands for production of desired results. Production of desired results. In other words, the golden eggs, the things you want. PC stands for production capability. In other words, you want to preserve and, if possible, enhance the asset that produces the things you want, that produces the golden eggs. The key then is PPC balance. P again for production of desired results. PC, production capability. Now let's look at some illustrations of this. Let's take all three kinds of assets that are present in the world today. All three. Physical, financial, and human. Let's develop the first two because it will help us understand the human better when we go deep into that one. First, the physical asset. All right, now, let's just assume for a moment that you are the foreman of this machine. Brand new machine, fantastic machine. And you're eager to make a short-term impression on your bosses so you can get the promotion. Because you're really in a growth mode in your company, okay? All that's important is the short term. What would you do?
Run the machine to its highest capacity.
Right.
For a short term.
Okay, just zoom it right up, speed it to its highest capacity, no downtime, no maintenance, night and day. I can't tell you how impressed we are. Really. we watched you take over this department. And the department was going in a mediocre program until you came along. And the production, as soon as you hit it, went like this, and the cost went like this. And you tripled the profits in this operation. We are promoting you. You're one of us executives now. The next new form of the machine comes on board. By this time, the goose is getting sicker and sicker, and it starts to break down. You look inside the machine, and it's rusted up. You immediately call for downtime. Downtime everywhere. Your costs go like this. Maintenance. Repairs. Your production like this. Start writing red ink. Within 1 month after you left that operation, red ink is coming out of his leadership. I mean, what do we say to him in the executive corridors? You know, it was fantastic. You turned that whole baby around. We could see, you know, you've heard the expression, can one person make a difference? My friend, you made a difference. And we're going to have a special banquet in your honor. How many have seen that or its equivalent? You know why we don't see the opposite so much? We don't have an information system on many of the assets. We don't know really what's happening. See, he was liquidating the asset in the name of more golden eggs. And it didn't catch up till he took over. A short-term bottom-line mentality is the essence of many, many of the problems we're having in our culture. Take medicine itself. Take medicine. Is that not a good illustration of a PPC imbalance? Think about it. About 99% of all of the dollars are spent on what? Right. Treatment. Fixing you up. Or on curing. Not prevention. I mean, when you think about it, isn't it ridiculous to have such an imbalance? Now, there is a growing trend in another area toward prevention. And really, some alternative medical forms are developing because people are becoming more aware of prevention, health consciousness, and so forth. But the overwhelming thrust, energy, and money goes to get what we want now. It's because the people want it. The people want it, see? They want the golden eggs. It's not until the goose is pretty well sick, almost nigh unto death, that some people start paying attention to their health. In fact, it's estimated that more money is spent keeping a person, a body alive, the last few days than is often spent an entire lifetime in prevention. Let's move for a moment to financial assets. How many of us have ever confused principal and interest? In other words, how many have ever invaded the principal, a financial asset, in order to live a little higher on the hog? Well, we all know, obviously, what's going to happen. It kills the goose eventually, but for a while, my, it's impressive, isn't it? How good you can live and the impressions you can make and what other people think about your generosity toward them or whatever. But it's, in the long run, a very foolish course of action. Physical and financial illustrations are easy. They're so self-evident, you hardly even need to explain them any further. People can see immediately what happens when you neglect the goose and go after what you want. When it comes to the human assets, that's where the greater significance of this principle takes hold. If you're a president and you want to take the whole picture, which would you say is the most important asset? The human, the financial, or the physical? The human? Why? The reason why the human asset is more important than the financial or the physical assets is that it takes human input to decide how to use the other two. See, the other two are totally programs. Only the human asset can program the programs. Now let's shift to relationships. You can see it with yourself, myself, we can see that. Now let's shift to relationships, the relationships we have with each other. I'd like to use a metaphor and use it over and over again through our discussions together. It's called the emotional bank account. We all know what a financial bank account is. You know, you make deposits into it, and then you have a reserve there you can take withdrawals from. An emotional bank account is a symbol of the amount of trust that's been built up in the relationship. So if I make deposits into the emotional bank account with Don, through courtesy and kindness and keeping my commitments to him and so forth, it builds up a reserve. The trust toward me becomes higher. And I can call upon that many times if I need to. I can even make mistakes. And that trust level, that emotional reserve, will compensate for it. He won't make me an offender for my word. The smallest thing I do, see, I don't have to worry about it every minute with Don. But if, on the other hand, I have a habit pattern of discourtesy, disrespect, cutting him off, overreacting, ignoring him, becoming arbitrary, messing around with his rice bowl. His rice bowl means his livelihood. It's a symbol for his livelihood. Threatening him, playing little tin god in his life. Eventually, I get into an overdrawn emotional bank account. The trust level gets very low. Then what kind of flexibility do I have? See? None. I'm walking on minefields. I have to be very careful. Everything I say, I measure every word. It's Tension City. Memo Haven. Protect ourselves. Protect our backside. Politicking. And many organizations are filled with that stuff. You relate? Yeah. Same thing can happen in a marriage, or with other significant loved ones, or with our children. We can neglect making deposits on a consistent and regular basis. The interesting thing about relationships is that if you have frequent contact with the same people, unless you're constantly making deposits, the ones you made before are so fragile, they evaporate. You have to constantly make new deposits. Now, with the relationship you haven't had, say, for many years, like an old high school buddy, and all of a sudden you see each other again, you can pick up right where you let off, because the early deposit is still there. It's not fragile. But people that are around you all of the time require constant deposits. Now, you study early in the morning and at night in your homes to see how much negative or positive energy is being exchanged. Study it. If you want an interesting experience, turn on a tape machine. Really, and then listen to it later. Listen to it in a family meeting. You know, are we hugging each other verbally, physically? Or are we accusing each other, attacking each other, finding fault, and confessing each other's sins endlessly? It's so common in family life for people often to take it for granted and to start taking withdrawals from it and just assume that everything is fine, you know. The key, as I see it, is to live the primary laws of love, which mean give love unconditionally. And that will encourage other people to obey the primary laws of life, the laws of life of cooperation, contribution, self-discipline, integrity, honesty. But people who violate the primary laws of love, I actually believe, help stimulate and encourage people to violate the primary laws of life. Because it's one of the ways that they can defend their integrity. See, their identity. I matter as a person, independent of you. Rebellion and ignorance are both knots of the heart, not of the mind. Knots of the heart. The key is to make deposits. Many deposits. Do you think this PPC balance idea pertains to business? Think on it. Are customers an asset? We have a restaurant in our city, great clam chowder they used to produce many years ago, to the point that they would have, oh, long lines of cars who would go to the restaurant and wait for the service at the window, and people that would pack the restaurant between about 11 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon, every day. People would buy the clam chowder and take it home and reheat it at night. Really, it was just a fantastic reputation that they had. See, an emotional bank account toward the customers called customer insistence. They just insisted on it. Customer preference, very strong. New owners came in. No one knew anything about this change of ownership, and they started to water down the clam chowder. What do you think happens to profits for a couple of months? It just zoomed. Why? Because you cut quality. You cut costs. And all profit is the byproduct of revenue less cost. You cut costs, your revenues stay high because of market insistence, market acceptance. You know, you could say, well, I got a bad batch. That was unusual. I'll go back, see. Many people wouldn't even go in there because of the trouble of having to wait through the lines. So they started getting a lot of those people. But within a short period of time, you know, the whole market was disillusioned. And it went from insistence to preference to acceptance to recognition to rejection. And then they tried to redeem themselves, see. But the people were disillusioned and it was obvious what had happened. And people felt like their expectations had been violated. Emotional bank account just overdrawn like that. You neglect PC with the customer, that's going to affect your revenue, which is going to affect your income, your employees. Everything will be affected by it. That's the basic idea behind P and PC. Okay, now let's look at employees. At employees. We've looked at customers. You are the employee. He is the customer, all right? How much do we value her opinions? We're in business. We're the business executives. How much do we value her opinions? Well, how much do we value his opinions? We should value it very highly, And even these businesses that say they don't, the top people will say yes, value the customer's opinions highly. But you know why a lot of the people do not value their opinions highly? Their feelings, their needs, and they're not sensitive to his needs? Why? Because I'm the supervisor and could care less about her as I sit and talk to her about how to treat him. In fact, one time I was introduced at a seminar like this. Now, Stephen's going to talk to us about some principles of building relationships. And I just want to make one thing clear. You people need this, and you need it bad. Really, and then he went out. The principle is this. Always treat your employees exactly as you want them to treat your finest customers. Now look, if you treat employees exactly as you want them to treat your customers, they will. Not when you are there, but when you're not there. If they're in your presence and you tell them to treat the customers well, they'll do it. If they're not in your presence, they won't. They'll treat them pretty much as they're being treated. Unless they are value-driven people. And there are some proactive, value-driven people that will treat others well regardless of how they're treated. We're going to talk about that under Habit 1. Let me give a brief summary of deposits and withdrawals that build or destroy the emotional bank account, the goose. First, little kindnesses, little courtesies, small things. In relationships, remember, the big things are the little things. The withdrawal would be little discourtesies, little unkindnesses, little forms of disrespect. That builds gradually, slowly, or it can destroy gradually and slowly. Second, keeping a promise, a major deposit, major withdrawal. What? Breaking a promise. Because people build too much of their hopes around promises. Particularly if it's a promise about their rice bowl, a promise regarding their basic livelihood, or the other jugularly important things of their life. They build too much. I've tried to adopt a philosophy for myself as a parent. Never make a promise you don't keep. Therefore, make them very carefully, very sparingly. Make sure you're totally aware of all of the variables so that you have a sense of control over those variables so that when you make the promise, they can absolutely depend upon you that you will keep it. Third, violating an expectation. Many of these expectations are implicit. Implicit means, you know, they haven't been explicitly stated or announced. But nevertheless, people bring to that situation their expectations and their hopes. That's why it's so important whenever you begin a new endeavor or a new employment to get out on the table all the expectations that are present. The fourth way of making a deposit or a withdrawal is a life of personal duplicity. Even though I may act with good human relations skills, you know, that I'm making deposits, that I keep my promises, that I clarify the expectations, but really, inwardly, I'm duplicitous. I don't have the character. The two of us sit and talk about him. He's our supervisor. We badmouth him. We do it in very safe, academic, sophisticated language, but nevertheless, we're confessing his mistakes constantly. It absolves us of responsibility for results in the name of what he does, see? What do you know I'm doing when you and I have a falling out? You know my nature. Sweet talk him to his face, bad mouth him to his back. That's the essence of duplicity. Be loyal to those not in your presence. And you create great deposits with those who are in your presence. The key to the 99 is the one. It's how you treat the one under the times of pressure and stress that really reveal how you regard the many, the 99, because everyone is a one, eventually. The fifth one is We apologize. I was wrong. That was unkind. I showed you no respect. I gave you no dignity. And after all that preparation you put into that presentation, and for me to give you a quick cutoff like that, it's totally uncalled for. The ability to apologize, sincerely. Pride, the opposite, is the huge withdrawal.
This is the end of side one.